week on 95 Mac Happy Hour, we are going to talk a little bit about Apple Car, a lot about some new iOS 14.5 features, and some Apple Glasses rumors, and then some Apple TV Plus stuff that's come up this week. So let's start out with the developer transition kit update. We spoke last
week. How are we talking about this again? This is hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I broke the news to you about how, like, you know, half-hearted the deal was, and then you broke the story to me on how they fixed it. So what are the details there?
Yeah, like, you know, there was a very muted response, I think, to the DTK thing. And look, we're privileged people to even get the developer in the first place or to be able to afford it, right? But everyone was based on the precedent of what they did for the Intel to for the PowerPC to Intel transition, where when the DTK went back, what got replaced was an iMac of equivalent value. And then this program comes along. Obviously, they never promised it, right? So you can't get too mad, right? You said that the transaction was stated. You pay $500, you get to use this thing, and then we want it back. Done. But there was, like, you know, always that, ooh, what are they going to offer as a nice little bonus, a nice little thank you?
Yeah.
And what we got slapped with last week was a $200 credit that you had to use by the end of May. Which just feels terrible. Like, especially as, and not me, I'm because I didn't actually get any M1 compatible stuff out yet, but a lot of developers that do get that kit, they're the most dedicated people in the community. They're rushing to support, you know, Apple's latest platforms on day one, often with the better quality apps as well, right? Just the better, you know, just the better quality developers are the people getting that kit. And they're like, you're coming off Apple's biggest quarter ever, and what do they give you? They give you a $200 credit on something you paid $500 for, and you got used by the end of May.
Before WWDC.
Before any of the cool rumored stuff actually comes out. And it's like, do you want to get this MacBook Air that you might have already bought? Well, incredibly, they actually had a change of heart. I can't believe they actually changed their mind on this. But on February 6th, they sent out a new email. And the new email basically said, we understand, we heard you. And this is what we're doing instead. So rather than a $200 credit that expires at the end of May, now all of us fancy developers can get a $500 credit, which is the same price as what we paid for the developer kit in the first place. And the credit doesn't expire until the end of December. So it runs through the end of this year.
Better than you'll get dreamed of.
So now my forthcoming cool M1X 16-inch MacBook Pro would now be, quote, $500 cheaper, because I paid $500 of it last year.
You prepaid a little bit.
I prepaid, yeah.
that's very good, though, because it especially feels good. Like, if they would have just done that, I'd been like, okay, cool. But because it was so half-hearted before, you know, it was more than half, it was less than half the value. Now it's like, oh, this really is a good value because it was so low before.
Yeah, now we feel great about it.
Yeah.
And they also clarified that for people that have actually already bought M1 stuff and they don't need it, they'll be able to use the credit on any purchase in the Apple Store that, quote, helps them with development. But I think it just basically means you can buy whatever you want with it.
You know, get you some AirPods Max.
Could pay an extra $50 and get some AirPods Max.
They help with development. I mean, they do a lot of things with them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to make an AirBuddy competitor and go against Rambo.
Yeah, I'm going to make an AirBuddy sticker pack.
No, but I'll be saving mine for the probably, you know, $3,000 I end up having to spend or whatever on the 16-inch MacBook Pro at the end of the year.
Yeah,
but,
good call.
Like, it's a nice. It's at least they're listening to the community, right? Like, there's been quite a lot of, you know, roundabouts of, does Apple really care about the developer community? Do they only care about the big people? Do they only care about the people that are giving them subscription revenue every 5 seconds? Or do they actually care about, like, you know, the small people, the indie developers? And at least the fact that they saw this response and they did something about it, you know, it's got to make people feel good versus the kind of, like, sour taste in the mouth. So I have indeed prepared the packaging as the email asked me to.
Cool.
And now I await my email to send it back.
Are you ready? Are you allowed to mail things from the UK right now?
That is a good question, actually. Like,
I know.
I mean, technically, if they do a courier service, I can, like, drop it off at the door. If they expect me to go to the post office, then I guess I'll have to negotiate with the British government that sending back an M1 developer kit is an essential service.
So you have till the end of the year to do this, basically. But, all right, let's talk about.
Well, you have to return it promptly, I think. Like, you get the voucher to use by the end of the year, but they want the thing back sent back
This should be a reality show. it's Planet. What is it called? Planet of the Apps.
Planet of the Apps. Yeah.
Here's season two. Let's talk about some Apple Car stuff, because we spoke over the last few weeks about how Apple's talking with Hyundai/Kia about manufacturing the body of their car, just making the Apple Car for Apple,
being the Foxconn of the iPhone, but for the car.
Probably. Yeah, and Hyundai was pretty chatty about it, and then they were like, "We're not actually working with them." Just really bizarre stuff. It seems that there's at least reporting this week that all talks between Apple and Hyundai/Kia have stopped. You know, we don't know if it's because of the chattiness in the press or what, but this is all weird to me. That's all I know to say.
I mean, maybe in the Steve Jobs era, if a company said something slightly too early, they get cut off and never spoken to ever again. But, you know, Apple's a bit beyond the childishness of that nowadays. Like,
whenever Apple was reportedly buying Beats, and it was going to be for $3.3 billion.
Yeah, it's 3.2. Yeah,
yeah, 3.2 billion, and then it ended up just being 3 flat because of Dr. Dre's celebration video.
Yeah, I don't know if that was actually the reason, but that was like floated around as the reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's good headcanon. Why not?
Yeah, you get a $200 million fine. Well, yeah, the $3.6 billion investment that Kia's getting has just been halved. Now they're only getting 1.8. No, but that's obviously not how it works, right? Like, you know, Apple can't back down. Like, if because Foxconn leaks stuff about the iPhone quite often. Like, we see those internal presentations where they're like, the iPhone 12 is going to have 5G, and they have to do a little PowerPoint slide for everybody, and it leaks out, and, you know, they never get repercussions of that stuff because they haven't got a choice. Like, they have to. And if Apple wants US manufacturing of their car, they only have a very limited number of options. And if they've already basically signed the dotted line for a $4 billion deal with Hyundai, they're not going to back out of that just because it leaked out to the press. Like, it's just unrealistic. But I think what the truth here is, because the news is basically like Hyundai and the affiliate Kia basically did a legal filing this week that said they aren't in discussions with Apple on incorporating to driving a car. So that kind of like flattened the idea, right? Even though, crazily, we were just talking, the reason it popped up and, you know, even on the podcast so much was like, you know, CNBC and Reuters were like saying as if it was like a signed deal and it was going to be announced on February 17th. You remember that? Like,
I do. Yep.
So the fact that those massive publications have got the wrong end of the stick, that's kind of crazy. But
now I don't know what I'm going to do on that date.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just a boring old February 17th now. There's no Apple Car announcement.
Yeah. Like, I think, yeah.
I don't know what. Obviously, Apple's going to be making a car, like, or at least they're currently again looking to make a car. Based on this latest rumor, it seems like the enthusiasm, the hype train is probably a bit premature. I think they're still going to do it, right? Like, but maybe it's not going to be announced in February. Maybe it'll be later in the year. Maybe they've, you know, found other suppliers they're negotiating with. Maybe the Hyundai and Kia deal was like on the table, but it wasn't like signed. So then they've been looking around, talking to some other people, and now they like maybe found someone else, for instance. So that's how I read it. Obviously, it's like, you know, the automotive industry isn't our specialty. But just in terms of like the Apple rumor sphere, that's how I kind of see it. But like as soon as there's if you're in the anti Apple car camp, as soon as there's a report that's like, oh no, they're not doing the Apple car, everyone's like, I told you so, this is the Apple television set all over again. They're never gonna make one. It's just all, you know, flummery and made up words and, you know, Chinese whispers. Like, it's not real. I you can't say that. Like, you know, we just talked about they hired the poor chassis head of body and chassis, right? Like, they're building this team out, and they're going
to probably to make the next iPhone.
Yeah, they're going to be making hardware, some hardware contribution to the car market at some point, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years. And as we still know, despite all this, there's the autonomous driving aspect is still way underway. There was that. Did you see the filing that they released with the California government that the number of hours, the number of miles driven by the Apple Car, you know, like prototypes, basically, doubled over 2020. So they're obviously, you know, ramping it up, and their disengagement went down. So, like, they're getting there, right? And I assume they're trying to time it so that when the autonomous system is ready to go, it will be perfectly timed with the hardware being ready to actually ship the car.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And even though we don't have anything for February 17th anymore, based on that one crazy rumor, the day after February 18th, the next American Mars rover will arrive at Mars and land.
So, oh, very nice.
Yeah, so now that you've got that vacancy in your calendar, next Thursday. All right, do you want to take a sponsor break here?
Sure. This episode, thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring Happy Hour. Take your time back with the power of Text Expander. Repetitive typing, little mistakes, searching for answers. They're taking precious time away from you and your team. And with Text Expander, you can get that time back. Turn the things you type into reusable snippets that can be used again and again and again. Copy and paste superpower. Get ahead of your productivity by taking advantage of Text Expander. It removes the repetition out of your work, so you focus on what matters the most. Save time and be consistent while you're at it. Text Expander makes it easy to give your team the right words for every situation, and they get it right every time. Whether you need to keep legal happy or delight customers with effective answers, you can rest easy in the knowledge that you and your team have got it covered and are giving people consistent messaging. Text Expander, you keep your team accurate and current with all the changes and latest messaging for your business and brand. Share your text and images with your entire staff to keep them on track. And even as an individual, of course, you can use Text Expander's powerful shortcuts and abbreviations to streamline and speed up everything that you type. Just create a powerful snippet once, and then you can use the assigned abbreviation to let Text Expander fill it out and do the rest of the job for you time and time again. No more repetitive typing and no chance for human error. Text Expander works everywhere you type, Slack, Google Docs, email, web browsers, the lot. And you can install Text Expander on Mac, Windows, Chrome, and there's iPhone and iPad apps as well. Unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. Once again, that's textexpander.com/podcast.
Thanks, Text Expander. iOS 14.5, we discussed this last week, the software update that's in beta right now for developers and public beta testers. Things like the redesigned podcast app, the ability to unlock your iPhone with your Apple Watch on your wrist if you're wearing a mask. Very, very useful.
Which but, last week you hadn't used because you hadn't turned it on.
Yeah, it's very useful when you turn it on.
it works pretty well though, right?
Yeah, it works pretty well. It's a little bit weird whenever it says that your watch is not close enough to the phone, even though you're holding your phone in your watch wrist hand. But you know, alas. But we still have new things to talk about in iOS 14.5, some new things that have been discovered. So let's begin with Spotify. What's new with Spotify as it comes to iOS 14.5?
Yeah, so obviously the HomePod supported third-party music services on it natively very recently, right? And Pandora have adopted that. We're still waiting for others to do it, like Spotify. And then if you go back to iOS 13... Apple added the SiriKit Media Intents, which let you control third-party music apps like you can do the Apple Music app through Siri on the iPhone. But there was no facility in iOS 13 up to now to be able to specify, like, I don't want to use Apple Music, I want to use Spotify predominantly. So if you just asked a generic music request to Siri, like, you know, play Taylor Swift, it would always go to Apple Music. You'd have to explicitly say play Taylor Swift on Spotify for it to instead route the request to the Spotify application on the iPhone, right? Now Apple hasn't actually announced this as like a feature or a thing. It's just kind of turned up in the beta, so maybe it's like premature and they're going to take it out, or they haven't decided it's going to ship yet or not. But what people have discovered in 14.5 is that when you interact with Siri for the first time after updating with music, it'll actually prompt you to pick a default music service. And what it does is it brings up a little list on the screen of, you know, Apple Music, Spotify, Pandora, all the apps that you have installed that support the SiriKit Media Intents. So all the apps that previously you could use via Siri by saying, you know, play this song on Spotify or play this song on Pandora, all those apps now appear on a little list as part of the Siri experience. It only happens one time. It's like, you know, choose your default music service. And so if you pick Spotify, from then on, when you just say a unqualified request, like play this album, play this playlist, play this, you know, artist, it won't default to Apple Music anymore. It'll be as if you said on Spotify at the end of it. So you're basically getting a default music service through Siri for the first time, which is pretty cool. It is also kind of strange. It just kind of popped out of the blue. Like, it's like, oh, here we go. Like, oh, we were not going to really announce it as a feature. I mean, already with iOS 14, they announced, you know, you can set your default web browser, a default email app, right? And they work to limited extent, but they do work. But, you know, they sneaked in here and offered it for music. The thing is, they could offer this for, like, every SiriKit domain, you know, there's like messaging, reminders, mapping, navigation, and so far in 14.5, it only offers you default options for music, which is a bit odd, but there you go.
I would love if it worked with the reminders domain with things, so you could just use things as your reminders app. That would be
without having to say on things every single time, or
right,
two things.
Right, yeah. With things, you know, yeah. And also there's a really good example of this being used already with what Amazon does with Echo products in the Alexa app, because you set the category for your preferred music streaming service and your preferred music radio service. So you could say, I want my on-demand stuff to come from Spotify, but my streaming stuff to come, or my radio and algorithm radio to come from Pandora. You know, I think it's probably more likely that you've got the same for both, but that's how far the ecosystem goes. It's an obvious next step to have some UI for this, especially so it's discoverable, because it's kind of, how do you invoke it now? You talk to Siri, and then you ask it to use Spotify, and then it suggests it for you.
Yeah, basically, I think the way it works is the first time you update to 4.5, whenever you next make a music request, it will say pick a default service, and okay, then you choose it from the list. Or afterwards, you can like specifically ask Siri to change your default music service, and then it will give you the options, or at least it's meant to give you the options. But yeah, like you're right, it's not very discoverable, because if you choose Apple Music the first time and then you forget, there's no like UI to change it. With the web browser and Safari stuff, if you go in settings and you go onto Safari, it says like default browser, and it says, you know, if you pick Chrome or something instead. As of the current beta, if you go into the music app when you've selected like Spotify, it doesn't have any interface there to change it back. So they should definitely add that. And if they're going to keep adding more and more of these like default preferences, they need to like make a dedicated section of settings where it just has all this stuff listed and you can tweak it to your heart's content.
Yeah, they have a Siri settings section. So
And by the way, I think this still has the same limitations as the HomePod music thing, where like if you pick a third-party service, it will try and use that for podcasts, audiobooks, and music. Like it only knows the audio domain, it doesn't have subcategories beyond that. So,
I see, okay.
So it's a bit of an issue there. Like if you're using Spotify for music and podcasts, well, it's fine, right? Or if you only ask for music through, like personally for me, if I did use I use Apple Podcasts at the moment, but if I did use a third-party podcast app and I wanted to use Spotify, it wouldn't actually bother me, because I don't know, I never ask Siri to play podcasts. If you see, I always ask Siri to play music, but I never ask to play podcasts. So I don't know why that is. It's just the reality.
It's because it's not reliable.
I mean, that's probably one of the
reasons. That's how I got bringing the HomePod was.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? Like it's you know, it's better than nothing, obviously, but ideally down the road they'd have like, you know, it doesn't need to be complicated. You just have every single category and it says what app do you want to use by preference. And you can still use the other ones just by saying their name. It's a nice they've done it, and obviously there's the antitrust thing having over here that this probably helps them assuage some of that criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something else that I discovered this week with Siri is I was on my motorcycle and I was using AirPods for audio navigation, and Siri said over the AirPods, did you know, or you can now tell me about accidents along your route. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So then I tried it in the moment and I said, Siri, there's an accident. And then Siri gave me the definition of accident and asked me if I wanted to read more. And I said, no, but it's the voice activated version of this new user interface that's in Maps. And Maps has a little bit of a redesign in terms of the, you're currently navigating screen. I think everything's just, there's like more rounded buttons and it's just tweaked a little bit. But what they've definitely added in there is the ability to give feedback along the route to say there's an accident ahead. There's a speed trap ahead, so that if you're going to come around the corner and there's a police officer taking radar, that you can mark that in the same fashion as what the app Waze does. And Waze, it was independent and then it was bought by Google. And so now it's a Google property. Apple now has full control of their map data in many parts of the world. And so this is, I guess, just one more example of where they go from there by owning their own data. And, you know, I don't expect it to be as robust as Waze yet, just because of the whole networking thing. I mean, it's just a beta right now, but maybe, you know, come iOS 15, iOS 16, this is in the wild and other people know about it. And the ability to do this with Siri is useful, because I believe to do the report an accident with Waze, you have to, you know, tap through the user interface or make a Siri shortcut for it, which who does that? And so the ability to have it as a Siri command and say, "Hey Siri, there's an accident ahead," is useful. Once you get down the wording the right way, because I didn't quite do it for some reason.
Yeah. So the categories that you can report for is accident, hazard, and speed check. That's what they call it. And so you've got a red icon, you've got a yellow icon, you've got a blue icon. This is cool, and it's great they're doing it, because, you know, we've seen that when they control the data for their maps, they can offer better experiences, right? And they've delivered that with the raw map data, and if they can build on that with, you know, navigation and directions and smarter stuff there, it'd be great. But, like, there is a kind of social networking chicken and egg aspect to this, where to actually... like, the reason Waze is valuable is not because you can report accidents, it's because other people report accidents,
right?
And then it routes you around them, right? Like, so for this to work well, this stuff actually has to be used, people have to report it, and so then when you go to do a routing with Siri on Apple Maps in the future, it actually gives you a better route, because it can be informed by the upcoming accidents or the hazards. Or even, like, I don't know how they're going to fully expose this yet, because this is just in beta for reporting. But, like, because for stuff like hazards and accidents, yeah, obviously it's going to just, like, route you around them, right? Or that's hopefully what it would do. But for something like the speed check stuff, is it going to, like, I guess they have speed camera markers on the map as of iOS 14 anyway.
Yeah, there's place markers for speed cameras. And then red light cameras, and then they also tell you, like, if you're actively navigating, Siri will tell you as part of your directions, red light camera ahead. So
yes,
I guess maybe I don't know that Waze quite does that. I think Waze,
it has some of that.
It'll give you an alert. Yeah, it notifies you. But this will be good once it's actively, you know, in a non-beta version of iOS and people are heavily using it.
Do you think it's out of character for them to offer you to, like, report speed cameras?
It didn't stand out to me.
Like, because I feel like in the past, and maybe I've got the impression that was the kind of thing Apple Maps was never going to do, because, you know, Apple wants you to follow the law in all circumstances. But, I mean, if they're going to show you the speed cameras on the map, they might as well let you have user-reported speed cameras as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, remember when Apple went head-to-head with the FBI over encryption, you know? I know this is different, but...
It's just like a funny thing where it's like... Because it's not an admission to, like, break the law, but it's kind of like, this helps you break the law. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a weird thing for, like, Apple's brand to have, but the reality is every other mapping app that has, you know, user-contributed data, crowdsourced data, offers the speed check stuff. So they could not do it, right? Like, it'd be...
Maybe it'll get pulled out of the beta and we'll hear a story about it. It was some rogue intern who included this stuff.
But yeah, like, it's cool that they've added the reporting, and then we'll have to wait and see how they actually, like, expose it on routes to, you know, to actually be useful.
Yep, that's right. And then the last thing that we've noticed this week, and now it's 14.5, is how fraudulent website warning the setting works in iOS 14.5, because it's already there in previous versions, but how it behaves is different. Is that right?
Yeah. So I barely remember the story, the background of this, but do you remember, like, was it a year or so ago? There was a big flare up that Apple was reporting web browsing hits to Baidu in China.
Okay.
And basically, for the safe browsing feature, this has existed for ages, and it's on every browser, right? When you visit a website, it checks against a database.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah. To see if it's, like, you know, bad, right? Or it's like a scam or whatever. And if it's in the database, it can show that alert on the screen instead of actually taking it to the website. But to do that, you know, it's somewhat unprivate, right? Because it's basically having to send the website that you're on to a third party to validate it and send you back the response. Now, it is more complicated than that, because they, like, hash the URL and they only send parts of it, and, you know, they try and make it good. But at some level, you're sending every page you visit to somebody else. And this happens in the US and most of the world through Google's fraudulent safe browsing service. It's used by Firefox, I think. It's used by loads of browsers. It's used by Safari. And then in China, because Google is blocked in China, they use the Baidu version. And about a year or so ago, there was like a semi-privacy scandal because it was like, Apple's sending every website you visit to China. You know, that kind of story. What they've done in 14.5 is they've basically taken the privacy protections to another level, because now, rather than Safari browser contacting like the Google service directly, it first contacts like an Apple endpoint, and the Apple endpoint contacts Google or Baidu on the back end. So basically, your IP address now no longer gets sent to Google or Baidu or whoever else they use for fraudulent search in the future. So it's slightly more privacy preserving in that way, because your IP address is only ever getting shared to Apple, because then they go and make the request for you to Google and to thingy. So it is an improvement. And as they, you know, continue to tout, you know, their focus on privacy and security, it should be their prerogative to do this wherever they can, like tighten down the hatches in every single way. Like, if you want to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk. And this is a way to do it.
All right. Makes sense to me. Do you think any other Apple podcasts with AirPods Max every week?
Talk about AirPods Max every week?
No, podcast with
AirPods Max every week. Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah, you're and the only so far. I only know that you're the one that does it. So
yeah. You know, just wanted to mention it because it's every week. I'm consistent here. All right, let's take a sponsor break.
We are sponsored this week by ExpressVPN. You know when you search for something on Netflix and it shows up in the little like autocomplete thing, but the show's not actually there? The fact is, Netflix has thousands of shows that it hides from you based on your current location. And then to make it even worse, it puts its prices up. If you want to get the most value out of subscriptions possible and see all the content on Netflix from all around the world, you can use ExpressVPN. Netflix in the US or the Japan or the UK where I am, it's different. You get different content libraries depending on where you are. But with ExpressVPN, you can virtually change your location and control what countries in Netflix that you want to watch. ExpressVPN has over 90 countries to choose from. So when you run out of stuff to watch in your own, you know, US library, just switch to another country and unlock new shows to enjoy. So for instance, The Office left Netflix in the US at the end of last year. Well, you can just switch over to Canada with ExpressVPN and just keep watching Michael Scott. Of course, ExpressVPN works with more than just Netflix. You can do the same kind of thing with other streaming services, like being able to access the BBC iPlayer from the US, the BBC iPlayer that, you know, I enjoy. ExpressVPN is super fast. Unlike some other VPNs, you can stream over ExpressVPN with zero buffering across your phone, laptop, and on the big screen with support for smart TVs and more. So stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. To get your money's worth, go to expressvpn.com/happyhour. Don't forget to use our link so you can get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour. One more time, expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more and sign up.
Have you ever seen The American Office? Now that you've got your own
version. Yeah, of course I've seen The American Office.
Then you have your own version over there.
Yeah, I actually prefer The American Office to the British one.
Cool. All right, good to know. Let's talk about Dan Riccio's secret project. We discussed this whenever Apple made their, you know, vague, mysterious press release to say that Dan Riccio was no longer going to be with the VP of hardware, and he was now going to be working on a secret project. I think the guesses were two things, you know, Apple Glasses or Apple Car, and then you can narrow it down and say, well, which one's more likely to happen, you know, sooner, you know, and that's your guess. And there's also our former colleague Mark Garman at Bloomberg, he had a report out this week that reports on what it is, not just a guess, but based on reporting. So what is Dan working on, man?
According to Bloomberg, Dan Riccio is transitioning to oversee the AR headset, the AR/VR headset. He's on the team that's developing future Apple and VR headsets. There's obviously the rumor that there's going to be kind of like a developer version or a super high-end like $3,000 headset coming in 2022. You know, that's going to have super high-resolution displays and it's going to be, you know, expensive. But the idea is this will come out and then down the road they're going to do one that is like actually what's going to be as big as the iPhone, say, you know, like the an Apple Watch or larger ambitions. Like the $3,000 headset is not going to have Apple Watch ambitions. And, you know, that Bloomberg report from a couple of weeks ago said they aim to sell one per store per day or something, so which is like 200,000 units a year, which is enough.
That is cheaper than some of the original Apple Watch models.
I mean, that is true, yeah. They're not going to come out with AR with the AR headset in solid gold.
AR edition, yeah.
Yeah. So Bloomberg says that Apple is hitting roadblocks in developing its AR headset. And that's the first one. So I guess Riccio is going to, you know, step back from his day-to-day responsibilities of doing all of Apple hardware engineering so he can help ship the developer, beta, prototype, whatever you want to call it, industry-focused one out the door. And then after that's done, be able to move on to get the, you know, the mass consumer one on the way. It says that Apple has informed staff that they also transition in the group that's currently working on in-house displays and camera technology under Johnny Cerugi's control. So Cerugi is obviously the one that's managing silicon design and the ultimate team leader for, you know, the M1 chips, the A14 series, all of that stuff.
And modems too, right?
Modems, yeah. Currently charging processors and modems. We haven't yet seen the Apple modem come out, but that's obviously in development. That was last rumored to be coming like 2023, 2024.
That's the holdup for Max getting cellular is...
No. if they really do wait till 2024 to give you a cellular Mac, that'll be...
The low traffic, because there's like nothing in licensing fees because it's so low volume.
Yeah.
It's like, why wait?
Yeah, like... The goodwill of the M1 architecture transition will have more than died out by 2024.
Sure. Yeah.
But obviously, that's interesting because they're moving under his domain as the rumors that Apple are developing their own micro LED displays, right?
Indeed.
They're going to ship fully custom displays, probably starting with the Apple Watch at some point. There's been on and off rumors that they've got a little like headquarters near a dedicated building near Apple Park where they're like growing because micro LED is like organic, so you're like growing the screens and then you work out to make one or two of them and it's like, oh, this is great, and then you've hit the problems of how do you make a million of them. So that's kind of where micro LED is sitting at the moment. It's like you can make some in a lab and they look really cool, and then but how do you get yields up to actually be practical? But if that's going in Cerugi's head, that probably signals that it's closer to being done, because generally a lot of the time Apple like incubate something, and then when it's like getting close to prime time, they then go and give it to like the head of the group.
Yeah, to actually get otherwise you're not going to waste that executive's time on something that's R&D.
Yeah, like R&D projects aren't going to get that kind of attention, right?
Right.
I think we saw the same kind of thing with the Apple Watch or like the iPad. Like the VPs that they work on the iPhone, and as the iPad got closer to ship, they pick, you know, some of their favorite VPs to go and head up the iPad project to actually get it out the door. Same with the Apple Watch. And obviously the same things playing out here with AR. Those inside Apple hope that Riccio's hardware expertise will help move past the issues that they're having. But day-to-day work on the project is still being led by Mike Rockwell. So he's still leading what Bloomberg describes as well over 1,000 engineers working on the AR and VR headsets. But they hope that that Riccio's influence is actually going to make a difference in getting the thing out the door. And finally, Bloomberg basically says that around last March, Riccio had handed oversight of many of his responsibilities already, like electrical engineering, product design, and project management for the iPhone and most of Apple's other major products to John Ternus, John Ternus is now the SVP of hardware engineering. But it seems like this transition has been long in the works, and it started last year and now it's been formalized, basically.
Very cool. And there is this. Well, where are we in Apple glasses? I mean, what's your timeline that you think where this is going to be more than just the $3,000 thing that we
well, I think
year?
The problem with the real glasses, right, is that current technology can't make them. Like, you just have battery problems. Like, if you want something to have a decent battery life, like if you need a product that you're going to wear all day long, it needs to have all day battery. Is that the same problem with the Apple Watch, right? Like, and people complain about the Apple Watch's battery life. Like, there is a limit on how much stuff people are going to accept to be able to charge on a regular basis. And the very minimum for like glasses is you want to be able to wear them all day long. Like, you can't have AR glasses that you wear for like 3 hours and then
put them in the charging case.
Yeah. Like, that's just stupid. Like, because people, obviously, if you don't need glasses to see, it's like, okay, you put them in your bag, but people are going to, they're not going to carry two pairs of glasses around. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're just going to need, they're going to need to last a long time. but to last a long time, you need bigger batteries, but then that means you kind of have a slim and slender design, which then looks bad, so they can't be made, right? That's the current issue with the AR glasses thing. Like, the headsets is going to look like HoloLens, right? And that's just a big thing that, you know, you look like a submarine controller with, you know, the whole, the mask on and everything. Like, and that's fine if you're doing industry work or you're just playing games in the comfort of your own home. Although I doubt that the $3,000 headset is going to be a big hit in terms of gaming at that price point, just because it's so expensive, right?
Gotcha.
But if you're trying to make a lifestyle AR glasses product, not a headset, there's a reason none of them exist, right? The closest you saw was like Google Glass, but that wasn't anything close to an actual AR experience. It was like a little screen that was in the top.
It was a heads-up display. Yeah.
Yeah, heads-up display, yeah? The Google Glasses was like an Apple Watch that you could see by looking forward rather than looking at your wrist, right? And maybe Apple does ship a product like that sooner than anything else, but that's not going to be like obviously what they want to do with like a proper AR, mixed reality AR experience. So yeah. I think the AR project is like still years away. So when did Lynch join for the Apple Watch? That was like 2012, 2013, basically.
It had to be after 2013 because I started 9to5Mac in April 2013. I think we both did. And then
so Lynch was after that. So it's probably 2013, 2014, basically, and the Apple Watch shipped. No, it's got to be longer than 2014 because the Apple Watch was announced at the end of the year. So it's got to be, it's probably around 2013, probably sometime in 2013. So if you work on the Apple Watch timeline, you've got 2 more years, but you can't just
fair.
Yeah, but you can't just copy and paste that over to this because it's a different ball game, right? But
yeah,
I think you've at least got 2 years. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Our friend, Chaos Tian. On Twitter, yeah, a few weeks ago he sent me a link to a motorcycle helmet that I think in his words apparently works with CarPlay and they apparently is pretty strong there because I looked at it and it's called Eyelights I Ride, and the whole Apple Glasses thing got me thinking about this again. What it is, it costs about $600 US dollars. You add it to any helmet you already have. And it's this whole system that there is like Bluetooth and voice control and speakers, which you can already do all those things with a helmet, but it also has one of those little tiny, you know, prism lenses that you have, I guess, angled so that you can see through it as you're riding and project it on
kind of
that.
Like Google Glasses.
Exactly like Google Glass. And they work out in some way to project apps like Waze and Google Maps, and they even show CarPlay projected. Now, I'm not so sure how they achieve that. You know, I know that there's aftermarket ways to have wireless CarPlay on an existing CarPlay system, and it's like it runs a version of iOS on that little dongle in a way that's not very trustworthy, but it works. This thing, I don't have one to test it out yet, but it just the premise alone to have a heads up display like this, so not even AR glasses, but this thing that attaches to your helmet is just you put your helmet on and then you can see, you know, with translucency, so you see through it, but it's also on the road. There's that, and that's something that you can apparently buy today. I don't want to risk $600 on trying to get it, but that's out there, and it made me think this is a thing that would be useful for you know the Apple Glasses in the future. You know, definitely not the HoloLens version, but the long term goal. Because right now when I'm navigating, you know, if you're in a car, you might mount your phone or have an in screen in your car screen. I mount my phone on the handlebars and that works out really well. But sometimes the phone's in my pocket and I'm using the watch and that's a little bit too far from my comfort zone. So this would be neat to have. And it certainly isn't the full CarPlay experience, you know. And the other thing I stumbled upon today and looking for the first thing, the Eyelights iRide product, is something called Live Map. And it's still not really AR. I mean, it tries, what this does is it's a full motorcycle helmet. So the first thing you put on your helmet of any type, this thing is the helmet itself. And it's got this, you know, projector built in Google Glass style, and it overlays, I guess it looks at the road and overlays lane guidance on the road. And that's this big thing. And it costs $2,500, which I thought that was interesting to be the single application use of something like this. And then they promised availability in Q3 of 2022. So
no, it's a bit of a while off then. You could buy an Apple Car by that time.
It's so specific. Q3, you know, usually you see like the first half, second half, or like Q1, you know, but say Q3, the first half of the second half of the year, we think will shift this thing. But
that's what I hope they do on the Apple Car, by the way, when they eventually do make one, like have the, not just a heads up display, but like you'd be a proper overlaid, like, so you almost get like a mixed reality AR experience projected onto the road with like,
yeah.
Because I always talk about how we need it on the Apple Maps on the iPhone, where you get the little augmented reality thing to point you left and right, which they still haven't shipped, but they should totally do.
Yeah.
Like, do that on the actual car. And then maybe if you're like sitting in traffic, you can like press a button and it zooms forward to the, what do they call the Google Street View? What's it called?
Look around.
Yeah. So you know, you get stuck in traffic and you just want to see where you're getting to. You press a little button and then, you know, what you're looking at instead zooms forward and you can almost pretend like you're already there. Like, that's what I want from the Apple Car. It's got to be that cool. Like,
yeah.
I don't just want like a Tesla conveyor.
A friend of mine has a BMW SUV that projects out onto the road. Not really onto the road, but just on the windshield. And you see things like your miles per hour, and I guess the idea there is that you don't have to look down at the dash, you just look ahead and you see those things, but it's not obtrusive, and it's kind of a neat gimmick, kind of a neat demo, but
I've seen that Mario cars too. They're you know, as a parallel, they're more like the Google Glass experience, right, where you get a little projection in the corner,
sure,
and
yeah.
Then the real deal is like, you know, it can actually just superimpose over anything on the screen, like,
yeah, interacts with the environment too.
Yeah, and all the investments we're seeing them do in Apple Maps, whether it's their own map data, look around, car accident reporting, all of that stuff, that all feeds into the eventual car product, right? Like, I don't think they'd be half as interested in developing all these Apple Maps features if they didn't, you know, have hardware ambitions to actually ship a car in the future. Because it's all gonna go in there, and you're like, they keep adding new features to CarPlay, which is great, but all that stuff's gonna be rolled into like the actual Apple Car eventually.
Yep. And on the topic of AR, a couple of things with Apple TV Plus. So first, I published my review of For All Mankind this week. So I've seen all of season two. I can't say much about it except that I very much enjoyed it. And then you can read my review, which has no spoilers, but just general sentiments about the season. And, the bottom line for me is that if you like season one, you might have seen the trailer for it and thought this is going to be vastly different, but the trailer is, you know, it's an action trailer and the show is a sci-fi drama. And so if you liked all the character development and interactions and stories in season one, you get that same thing, but, you know, in 10 years later in season two. So I thought it was very enjoyable. And, I got to do, some interviews.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
You can, you know, if you're not allowed to answer, that's fine. But is there, because the only thing I didn't like about For All Mankind season one is that quite a lot of it felt like a drama on the ground, right? And it almost felt like it was, you know, it didn't have to be related to space. It was just like family drama, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine, and it interweaves into story. On season two, I know you're saying it's like, you know, the actions in the trailer and then it's a thingy, but is it still like family stuff or is it more like, you know, like space Cold War battles? Do you see what I mean? Like, even if it's just talking about it.
I would say that there's as much like family drama on the ground again, but the further they go into the show, the deeper they're integrated within this is the space program. These people work in the space program and that the drama is because of the space program, not just because they're, you know, a family of three or four. And there's certainly more space because they're further along and they're
like the trailer's got them like with guns walking across the moon. Like, I want the moon conflict with the Russians, like a big shootout, you know?
Yeah. But
based on your description, it doesn't sound like that's quite happening.
I would also say that it's something I mentioned in the review. You know, the Cold War was largely tension building up of what could happen with nuclear weapons, and that didn't. And it's kind of the season is a bit like that too, where the tension builds up throughout the season. And then I also mentioned in the review that if there's one thing that I could critique about it, it's that, a couple of concerns is if you do a 10-year jump every season, are you really going to have the same cast every year? You know, as you can see probably from the trailer, I imagine, the way that the character Ed Baldwin is aged wasn't very, it took you out of the scene when he was, you know, had like fake gray hair and like way too dark of a tan. I mean, that's realistic, but also it's distracting. But so there's the concern of, you know, are the characters that we're following and care about now, are they going to be in future seasons? You know, we'll see. And then the other thing is, because it is tension building up at the season, and then near the finale, there's so much happening all at once that you definitely get payoff, but it becomes hard to keep track of some of the things that's happening. You're like, they don't spread it out across the show. It seems like there could have been like three or four arcs that they had, and that's the season. And instead, it was Cold War style buildup, which is really modeled Cold War, you know, as history. But it's nice. And in the first, this won't even be a spoiler, you know, I can totally say this. In the first, few minutes of the first episode, there's a newsreel montage that's only in that first episode, but it's just very entertaining if you're a fan of history to see all the things that happened differently, including John Lennon narrowly escaping assassination. You know? So it's neat to see how many things are different. And of course, in the series, in the season, Ronald Reagan's president, I think it was kind of an undertone, but in the first season, I think Ted Kennedy was president, which never happened. He ran, but didn't, wasn't elected, as president. And now we're back to reality. Maybe the timing and the years are off, but then the events are what's get shifted. But, I also think it's, you know, you don't have to care about space stuff to really appreciate it. It's drama all on its own. Now that this year I know more about space stuff than I did a year ago when the first season was available. And I picked up on some of the Easter eggs, the trivia. There's things like, LC-39C being a launch complex 39C. That's at Kennedy Space Center. There is one now, as of 2015, for very small rockets. And I think it's about to open soon. But in the 70s and 80s, there was not a C launch pad. There's just A and B. And the idea in the show is that they just mentioned it, that there's about to be a shuttle taking off from LC-39C. And, it's to say that the shuttle program is so successful that they have more launch pads at that one launch complex. And so if you're a space fan and you know the kind of the history there, those things will stand out as neat trivia. You also see, in 80s, a Tesla equivalent and, you know, things like that is entertaining. So
they released like a second like featurette trailer thing, and there's like electric cars.
Which in the range is like comical, like, you know, but it's funny.
60 miles.
If you like season one, I think it's the same show from the same creators. Okay. It's just the story continues, and I liked that about it. So
A sec, we can talk about, you know, you got your interviews and they got a cool QAR thing. Let's just do our last ad of the show.
Sure.
We're sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. Make a fresh start for your small business this year with LinkedIn Jobs. Whether you're shifting business hours around or you're hiring remote employees, having the right people on your team is essential. And when your business is ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person for your business fast. And to make things even better, your first job post is now free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 722 million members worldwide. Begin by posting the job title, company name, and location. And new features make it even easier to get started. You can post a job with targeted screening questions attached that help to filter out the pool and get your job in front of more qualified candidates. So you don't have to worry and rubbish through the piles of applications. It's going to filter it down for you to make it so much quicker. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for, and your job post is targeted to show up for people looking for a job just like yours. Put simply, LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. And now you can also manage job posts and contact applicants from a single view on LinkedIn.com with everything laid out in a single streamlined dashboard. And you can do all of this from your mobile device too, no matter where the day takes you. When your business is ready to make that crucial next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
Thanks, LinkedIn. Yeah, so as I was saying, I also did interviews with some of the cast and creators from For All Mankind And it was a really cool experience. It's the first time I've ever done something like that before. And I'd mentioned that in a previous episode, but now they're published. And I would promote like the things inside of them, but I haven't actually listened back to them besides doing a little bit of editing for the video. My plan was to listen through and transcribe and include his quotes in the article. But then, because video is hard, but it turns out editing videos clips together and it is easier than transcribing and and listening back to half an hour of interviews. So they're
on the YouTube channel.
So they're on the YouTube channel. I think it worked out well. Lastly on For All Mankind, for this week at least, because I guess next week will be a couple of days away from the season premiere. Apple has released their first augmented reality app connected to Apple TV Plus. So this was reported as a rumor like last August or so from Bloomberg that Apple was working on some kind of director's cut material, some bonus materials for Apple TV Plus content. And the first version of it is For All Mankind Time Capsule. And it is an iPhone and iPad app, uses AR kit. There's even a couple of parts of it that require the LiDAR sensor on the iPad Pro and iPhone.
That's why they added the LiDAR scanner.
Yeah.
Apple TV Plus bonus content.
All that time. And the iPhone 12 Pro and iPhone 12 Pro Max. And what the app is, it's the name kind of suggests what it is. It's Time Capsule. You're the character.
Apple's making routers again?
I this is the comeback. I wish it were so. This is the alternative timeline aspect of it.
Does it back up all your iCloud account information to a local disk?
It's like iCloud for your Mac. that would be amazing. It's set between the two decades. So I think For All Mankind season one ended in the early 70s.
Early 70s, yeah.
Yeah. And this picks up in the early 80s. And so it's the character Danny Stevens, who's the son of Gordon Stevens and Tracy Stevens, both astronauts. It's some of his teenage years, because he's a character who's in season two sort of prominently versus being, you know, a kid in the background in the first season, based on that decade jump. And, it's a cool AR demonstration. You're going through a kind of a box of trinkets and there's some storytelling involved. There's, theme music. They have the same person who made the same composer who made the music for the show do the under music for the app. There's some music like some Bob Dylan licensed to kind of put it in the time that it's in. And, it's AR kit, so it looks cool and it works well. And there's some keys on the screen that you interact with where you like slice open a cookie or, you know, open this envelope, that kind of thing.
There's a little Mac.
I was gonna say there's a little bit of an Apple cameo. This happens in the season as well, where the Apple II makes an appearance as like the computer of the day in the 80s. And that's normal, but what's not normal is that there's email, and they call it D-mail for digital mail. And they say it's a predecessor to email. But that makes sense. I mean, email, okay, I get it.
D-mail, because D comes before E.
Yeah, D's before E. Yeah, exactly. You know, that's what happens when this base program flourishes, I suppose, is that you get D-mail before you get email. Okay.
What are they going to have next? The N phone. Wait, that N doesn't come before I.
It'd be
the K phone.
K.
No, that's not. Wait, why can't I do the alphabet today?
J K L M H I.
It's H, isn't it?
It's H,
H,
yeah.
Phone.
H I. Yeah. H.
Yeah. Yeah. H phone.
H phone. You nailed that joke.
Yeah, that really felt bad.
Yeah. But anyway, the app is available. It's in the US only. I think people are saying it's in the UK as well now. It's going to be available in more markets soon, they say. But it's interesting. I mean, they had a little bit of a panel discussion with Ron Moore, the show creator. And he said something that was interesting, which is that the newscast that they use in the show in For All Mankind, you know, they're obviously fictitious newsreels, but they write a bunch of those, and that's one of his favorite things as a history buff. And they only get to use a few because otherwise it would be a show about newscast. And this was a way to recycle some of those, because there's a newscast in the app experience, and he likes those. So this was a way to use that. I ask if there's going to be more of these, you know, for season two as it's available, or future seasons. And the answer was really, we'll see how it goes, how reception is with this one. So I guess if it's a dud, no. But if it's popular, yes. And putting it in more markets in the US will certainly help. And you don't have to have seen any of the seasons to really enjoy the app, because it's a cool demonstration of AR anyway.
Yeah, it's like a cool way. Like, even if For All Mankind didn't exist, it's just a cool little thing to play around with, right? It's like an AR demo. It's like playing table tennis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like my comment is, like, it's cool bonus content, right? But if it's like, because it's not integrated into the actual TV app. It's just like you have to go download it from the App Store, right?
And I imagine at some point they'll promote it, but right now it's, you know, the press got a link to it, and then you read the press story and click the link to it. I was looking before the show, and without reading my story to find that I couldn't find it on the App Store yet. Maybe that changes as they promote it. But
it's listed under Apple's developer account at least. So
okay, that's helpful.
But like, what you need to have is, like, in the TV app, when you scroll down to the bit where it says bonus content, there needs to be, as well as the little, you know, extra videos they have there, it needs to have a link to the AR experience. Or when you, like, finish an episode, so you've watched, you know, you finish the season even, right? You finish season one of For Mankind,
yeah.
And then they should have, look, now you can enjoy this extra AR experience. It's like the special features on a DVD, right? Like, it has to be integrated into the thing you're watching. Like, Apple's done a bit of this already with, you know, various kinds of multimedia bonus content. They've done wallpapers to Ted Lasso. They've done iMessage sticker packs for Dickinson and Snoopy in space. But they tweet about them once, and then they're gone forever. Like, they're on the sticker packs aren't even listed under Apple's developer account. They're made by some third-party company, and they're just listed. So you're literally never going to find them, right? At least the For All Mankind one is under Apple's account, so that's an improvement. But they need to be, like, actually integrated into the TV experience. And it doesn't need to be, like, you know, annoying or just in the way, but maybe, you know, in the run-up to For All Mankind season two, on the little, like, if you've watched For All Mankind before, it could give you a little notification. It's like, you know, get ready for season two, enjoy the AR experience, blah, blah, blah. Or afterwards, you just finish an episode, and it's like, okay, now you've enjoyed this, you could watch the next episode right now, or why don't you try this on your phone, or, you know, or if you've finished Dickinson, you know, now go and share it with your friends and tweet us and show us, you know, your sticker packs and stuff. Like, doing the extra bonus content things are good. Even the wallpapers, like the Ted Lasso was a great idea. But that needs to be, like, in the TV app so you can scroll down, see the wallpapers, and then, you know, from within the TV app, set the wallpaper, right? Like, not this thing where it's like, oh, we're just going to upload these photos to Twitter in the right file format. So not only do you have to, like, see the tweet once when they ship it, then you have to save the image to your photo library and then set it as your wallpaper. Like, you know, you've got to do all the steps put together. And the thing that worries me when they say, oh, we'll see how the reception is and if we do more of them or not. But obviously, if you're never going to promote the things, or you're never going to actually have integrated the core experience, they're never going to be popular. Like, you have to do, it's chicken and egg, right? You've got to do the work up front to integrate it all together.
Yeah, a little bit concerning there. I would have asked how they plan to promote it, but it was the show creators, not Apple.
Yeah.
What are they going to say? And they were happy that it's, you know, it's on Apple's platform with the, you know, a billion potential users. So that's neat. And I actually haven't used the app yet because, in the couple of hours I had access to the story before it came available, we were just shown the demonstration of it, but not able to use the app. So because it requires LiDAR for at least one or two scenes in the app experience, I'm looking forward to that because there aren't a lot of things that require LiDAR. If you just want a good example of the LiDAR sensor on my iPad or iPhone, you know, at work, this is one sure way to do that. So I'm looking forward to trying that out. So I think also wanted to mention this week is a movie that Apple has purchased for Apple TV Plus called Dolly. Have you seen this story?
I've seen the story. Yeah. I can't actually remember what happens, but no, they acquired the rights to a package, of a movie called Dolly, and the concept of the movie is basically it's a robotic assistant that's standing trial in court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so it's not about Dolly Parton, because when originally I saw the headline, I was thinking it was going to be a Dolly Parton biography. Yeah,
they've had so much stuff with her. They've got the Shazam news. They've got the Time to Walk thing, but it's not. It's I mean, I guess the name is like a doll, but it's a robot. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of a play on that. It sounds weird. It stood out to me as something different that's coming in.
Have you ever seen iRobot, the Will mm-hmm. Smith movie?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like on along those lines, kind of a little.
Yeah. Is it that the robot kills someone though, and then it's like, I didn't do it or something? Oh, yeah. So this is from our story. Dolly is a sci-fi drama inspired by Elizabeth Bear's story, in which a robotic doll kills its owner and shocks the world by asking for a lawyer, claiming she's not guilty. The film has elements of both classic courtroom drama and sci-fi. So Just said that was weird. I mean, maybe it'll be really interesting and different.
It's like defending Jacob, but with robots.
Sure. Yeah. It's definitely kind
of. I'm down. I like courtroom dramas and I like sci-fi. So if they can do it well.
Cool. Yeah. All right. We'll see how it goes. And then there's news of we've been discussing the Apple TV 3, the third generation Apple TV that Apple sold for $100 for a few years and then for $69 at the very end of its life for a few months. And we discussed last week or so when this box lost access to YouTube, or it's going to be losing access to YouTube in March. It'll be AirPlay only for, you know, probably the biggest app on the platform. And obviously Apple has the Apple TV 4 and 5, the HD and the 4K versions now, and they've been out for a long time.
They're also long in the tooth.
They're also long in the tooth. But the latest casualty on Apple TV 3 is CBS All Access. Users of that box will no longer have access to that, and it will be AirPlay only. So that's one more for Apple TV 3. With, I think your point is a good one in that there's no clear replacement for the $100 streaming box, or if you paid $70 for it, even that price, you've got to look at, you know, $35 streaming sticks as their replacement. Apple just doesn't have a replacement in this category yet.
Yeah. And when, you know, the Apple TV 3 is still used by millions of people, when the little notifications pop up on your screen saying YouTube's going to stop working in March, CBS is going to stop working in March, do you think they're blaming YouTube? Do you think they're blaming CBS? No, they're going to blame Apple. Like, so not only are they furious at Apple for intentionally making their hardware obsolete, or that's at least how they see it, right? Like, technically, it's a bit common. Like, this all stems from the fact that the third gen Apple TV never had an app store, right? So all these things are just stuck in basically the firmware of what they had back in the day. So when they do big major new initiatives, they never move along.
It's like the feature phone equivalent of a streaming box.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old iPods, right? Like where they just kind of like they ship, this is what they have, and then slowly the stuff doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake of Apple. They should have done an app store on the Apple TV way before 2015 when they did the original Apple TV, and they wouldn't be in this problem. But hey, here we are.
Especially when they had like so many, and you could show or hide. You couldn't like remove or add.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and now it's even worse because people are mad. They're like, oh, you know, you're making my box worse. And then they go and look at buying another one. They're like, $150? This is ridiculously expensive because they remember buying it for $100 or $60 or whatever. And so they go and buy a Fire Stick, very understandably. So it's just a bad situation all around.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And also CBS All Access related. A few months ago, there was this really nice bundle that if you subscribe to Apple TV Plus, then you can purchase a bundle from CBS that has CBS All Access and Showtime for $10 a month. And so I think CBS All Access is $10 a month on its own. So you basically got Showtime at no extra cost.
Yeah, Showtime's like $10 as well. Mm-hmm,
yeah. So if you were an Apple TV Plus subscriber, which is pretty clever, you know, it makes you want to be an Apple TV Plus subscriber, or if you already are, it's a reward, it's a treat. And for me, I paid for both Apple TV Plus and CBS All Access. So it was a no-brainer to opt into the bundle because then I get Showtime at no additional cost. That bundle went away, and it's not weird why. Like there's Paramount Plus coming to replace CBS All Access as their streaming service versus, you know, a kind of a back catalog of CBS stuff, some of the new stuff, and then, you know, a few originals. So it's going to be kind of goes from being a channel to being a whole service of its own. And so it makes sense that the bundle goes away. It is funny though that for me, I never got to actually pay for Apple TV Plus because the free trial's been extended so many times that, you know, the idea of the bundle is you pay for Apple TV Plus and one of the two things and you get the third one for free. It's just been, I paid for $10 a month for CBS All Access and I got, you know, the other things just showed up there. So, it's too bad. But your hunch is that we probably won't, because CBS All Access it can be a channel in Apple TV.
Same as Showtime.
And Showtime can be a channel that you subscribe through Apple TV directly or through Apple TV, and you don't have to, you know, do a subscription through the other app or anything, and it plays directly in the app. It's a very good experience, but your hunch is that that's going to go away because Paramount Plus, because it's kind of Netflix level, it won't be a channel within Apple TV. It'll be its own service that they promote.
Yeah, we saw this happen last year with HBO, right? Like HBO was, you know, like the flagship Apple TV channel, and then when they launched HBO Max, they removed the channel, and now no one new can actually sign up to HBO through Apple TV channels. You get the app integration in HBO Max, so it shows up in App Next, but when you actually want to go and watch something, you then get yoinked out the TV app, and if you're going to the HBO Max experience, it's really annoying. Like, you just want to be able to watch everything in one place, and the TV app doesn't let you do that unless you're either watching Apple content or Channels content.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about Channels is on the Mac, there's not a lot of apps. I mean, if you have an M1 Mac, you're not going to have a good HBO experience, and you're not going to have a CBS All Access app at all. Same for Showtime. So by doing Apple TV Channels, it's in the TV app, and you can save it. You can offline, you know, download it, and it's a good experience. Works with picture-in-picture. There's not a web browser involved, and that goes away whenever there's not – you can't pay through Channels.
Yeah, and it's a consistent UI that's with everything else you're using, right? Like, it's not like, you know, a load of different silos. But unfortunately, due to everyone wanting to, like, you know, make their stand with their own services, Apple TV Channels are going away as fast as channels on the third generation Apple TV are. Like, they're just dropping like flies, unfortunately. And this one was the result of a promotional deal between Apple that they literally made a press release about, right? Like, a huge deal. And it's going to last 5 months because that was August. And it's going to be going away. So it's kind of a stupid situation, but it's sad. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with the TV app, because at the moment, like, it's like the place for everything put into one place, but it doesn't make a good experience. You don't get Netflix at all, and all the channels are just disappearing. So they might as well just make it like Apple
TV. Apple TV app.
The actual Apple TV app, not like an aggregator thing. I don't know. Like,
I think I agree with that. Unfortunately, there are a bunch of small channels that are never going to go away, like Smithsonian and, you know, the Nickelodeon thing and stuff like that. Last thing I want to mention this week before we go away is, because it affects, I think your Mac could be affected, is this MacBook Pro battery replacement program for the 2016 and 2017 models. Is yours affected because you've got a 2016?
Mine is a 2016. My battery seems to be okay.
Okay.
Well, okay in how it has been, because obviously it's now 4 years old, so the battery's really depleted. So if you actually unplug it, it only lasts for about an hour off on battery. But this is not exhibiting the problem that this replacement program describes.
Which is that the battery can't charge past 1%. Is that right?
Yeah, that's
a problem. Good thing they've got a replacement program. You know, when the M1 Mac has battery wear over 4 years, it's going to be like, you only get like 5 hours of battery.
Yeah, you only get 5 hours. What a shame. Boo-hoo. This is a really funny bug, though, because it's like, if you get afflicted by it, you have to send your laptop physically into Apple to get it fixed. But if you haven't been affected by it yet, Apple says you can just update to 11.2.1 and you won't be affected by it.
Which I presumably did.
I've done that, yeah. So,
it's basically
a software bug causes a permanent hardware fault.
Bricks your battery.
and so if your battery was stuck at 1% and you update to 11.2.1, it would still be stuck at 1%. That's why. So you have to cover. It's a hardware problem to cover up a software fault. They don't say the reason for it. I have to assume there was some like weird logic error with the optimized battery charging stuff, because they introduced that on the Mac pretty recently, right? Like, it's got to be something to do with that. And then, you know, it sent a weird message down to the battery controller that doesn't let it charge past 1%. So then they have to go and, like, they don't specify exactly what's wrong with it. It just says, you know, there's an experience with the battery not charging. I assume when they take it into Apple and get it fixed, they're probably not replacing the battery. They're probably replacing, like, you know, the little microcontroller that, like, is in charge of powering the battery or charging the battery, right? That'd be my guess. But
a new battery would be nice, though. In a 4-year-old machine.
This don't worry, I've had plenty of replacement programs I am eligible for or was eligible for.
Yeah.
Like the butterfly keyboard situation, which is now, because that was 4 years, wasn't it? They gave you 4 years to get that fixed. So I'm now firmly outside the window of that.
When they say don't buy first generation products, like the 2016 MacBook Pro is that example.
It's like this battery, like this 1% battery charger thing, it's like the smallest footnote on the list of problems with the 2016 MacBook Pro.
All right, nice. Thanks everyone who tuned in live to listen on youtube.com/NFIMac and on Facebook as well. And if you enjoy the show and you don't subscribe already, we are in Apple Podcast, Overcast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, maybe. And we appreciate you subscribing and joining us back every week. We broadcast live on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern time.
And you can follow us in the Apple Podcast app now.
Yeah, that's a new feature that's coming in the beta version after it's out of beta. It's subscribe becomes follow, which gives you room to subscribe monetarily.
In a different way.
Or it's just, maybe it's just a friendly way of doing it. But anyway, if you have any feedback for the show, you can email both of us together at happyhour@podcast.9to5. What is it now? What's the email?
Isn't it just happyhour@9to5mac.com?
Probably. Yeah, that's it. Well, definitely works. It used to be different.
It's been happy hour at 9fm.com for so long.
I know. I need lunch or something. Dinner. and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.